Verse 21 to verse 24, you have the whole, the root of the subject of kashering of vessels. Such a big topic just in these few verses over here. A couple of questions, three questions we could ask on this passage over here. Number one, why over here specifically? I mean, we understand that they're bringing back spoils of war, utensils, but there are other wars with the Jewish people fought up until this point against Sichon and Og. So they got spoils from those wars as well. So why does Hashem tell Moshe to write this passage in specifically after the war with Midian and not after the war with the other nations as well, where they also presumably got spoils of war as well, and they needed to cash in those utensils too? Why specifically over here after the war with Midian? Another question is why Elazar? Right. We'll come back to Elazar in a second. But another question is that if you look at the verse, it says that Elazar related this right to the men of the war, those who came into the war should be the ones who came back from the war. Those who came back from the war, because now it's relevant. The ones who are going into the war itself, they're not. Vayomer Elazar. Elazar Kohen said to the Anshei Hatzava who came back from this war, who brought back all these utensils. Now this law applies. So what's this? Those who are going into the war itself. And also, what does this mean? Zos Chukasator. This is the chok for the entire Torah. This is a law for the entire. Word chok is such a universal concept. A chok for the entire Torah. Why are the laws of Kashrus a chok for the entire Torah? What does that mean exactly? The other question, which I alluded to, is why is it Elazar speaking this? Why is Elazar the spokesman of these laws? Why not Moshe? So it's very interesting. Let's address that question. Why is this passage related from Elazar, the Kohen Gadol, and not Moshe? So Rashi says the reason why Moshe didn't state these laws, very interesting, is because he was angry. Because remember, go back a few verses, when they came back and they hadn't killed everybody they were supposed to have killed, so Moshe was angry. Verse 7, verse 13, Moshe and Elazar came out. And then verse 14, Yiktsav Moshe. Moshe got angry with the soldiers for not fulfilling the job properly, sufficiently enough. So the rule is, let's see Rashi over here. Rashi says, verse 21, Rashi writes, verse 21, Lefisha bom Moshe leklal kas, because Moshe got angry, he came to a mistake. It compromised his clarity. That it evaded him the laws of kashering of utensils because he was angry. It compromised his clarity. We learned about this on Wednesday. When a person's angry and a person's in a bad mood, it compromises the flow of clarity in a person's life. You don't have as much intellectual clarity. You don't even have spiritual clarity. We spoke about this, that when a person's angry or sad, you know, anger or sadness compromises the ability to think clearly and to even have nevuah. We learned about how Elisha, the prophet Elisha, had an encounter with one of the kings of the north. His name was Yehoram. It was a wicked king. It was a king of Avodah Zarah, of idolatry, led the Jewish people astray like his father Ahav. And he was standing in front of him, and Yehoram was trying to fight a war, and he was having trouble. There was a drought, etc. So Elisha came to him. He called Elisha himself. And Elisha was standing in front of Yehoram. And there was also Yehoshaphat, also another king, the king of the south. He was a righteous king. And Elisha chastised Yehoram for being a hypocrite. And he said, whatever I'm going to do is not going to be in your merit. It's going to be in the merit of Yehoshaphat, the other king. But he got angry. But then all of a sudden, he didn't have nevuah. He lost his ability to have nevuah, to have prophecy. So he said, can someone bring me a musician? Can someone bring their violin? Can someone bring their flute? I need some music in order to be able to get my nevuah back. Because in a state of anger, some say he was also in a state of mourning because his teacher Elijah just passed away as well. But either way, it's the same idea. Whether you're in a state of mourning or a state of sadness, of anger, so it compromises the clarity of mind, compromises our flow, compromises the connection to on high. So a person has to always be in a state of joy in order to have nevuah. Right? Always have to, and that's why Yitzchak, for example, when he gave the blessings he thought he was giving it to Esav, when he was giving the blessings, he requested, he wanted him to bring venison and food, bring delicacies so it can lift up my spirits. So it's a very, very important idea to have comfort, right? Material creature comfort, right? To facilitate clarity of mind and spirituality and closeness to Hashem. They go hand in hand. You know, it's even though on the one hand, we emphasize the reduction of overindulgence in physical things. Yeah, if it gets too much overindulgence, if it's to facilitate a clarity of mind, to feel good, to have good spirits, to feel good, to be able to have clarity and to have nevuah, then it's okay. But here in this passage over here, Moshe lost it. It's fascinating. He lost it. Rashi says, because he was angry, he made a mistake. Shenis almu memenu hilchos geule goyim. Those laws evaded him. He didn't know them. So then it was only Elazar who was able to relate the laws of Kashrus to the Jewish people. An incredible thing. This is, you know, such an important area of Jewish law, Kashrus. And yet the origin of it, at least one part of it, of in terms of kashering utensils, came through Elazar, not through Moshe, because at that particular point he was angry. So even though he's justified to be angry, but he was angry, it still affected him anyway. But back to the other questions. Well, the other questions were, why is it even being given at this point? Why is Hashem wanted to be brought out, particularly after this particular war, not after the earlier wars? Also, what does it mean that he's speaking to those who came to the war? Why not those who came back from the war? And also, what does it mean? This is the statute for the entire Torah. So it sounds like such a major idea. So I saw in one of the commentaries in the Siva Shalom, Slonim Rebbe, so he explains, and this is a very important concept, principle, that all these nations, Midian, Sichon, Og, all these different nations, all of these, the alien nations, the hostile nations for the Jewish people, they were physical hostile nations, but they also represented spiritual hostility as well. Each one of them, I don't know exactly how each one was different from the other, but they Mefarshim talk about how all the different nations all represented, here's a good word, Steve, klippas, right? They all represented the different klippas, like different, these spiritual negative husks which block spirituality. So it's if you imagine the Jewish people are at the entrance, the doorway of Eretz Yisrael to go in, and there's still forces, there are all these negative spiritual forces which are blocking entrance of the Jewish people to go in. And that's why these wars are so necessary. They're also targeting the spiritual energies of these nations to rid the world of these negative spiritual energies, to allow the Jewish people to go into Eretz Yisrael and experience the full Kedusha and connection to Hashem. But each of the nations, Ammon and Moab and Midian, they all represent different dimensions. So he writes over here, Shlomo Rebbe writes over here, that the Muhammad, the war with Midian, is really symbolic of the war with the Yetzer Hara. It's really symbolic of the war with the Yetzer Hara, because Midian is the Klipa Hagrua Beyosa. It's the most despicable spiritual husk which stands against the Jewish people. Shazomim Lahashmin as Klal Yisrael Rachmal, that they conspire to completely destroy the Jewish people. Their desire was much more insidious of what they did a few weeks ago and a few parishes ago. But they symbolize the klipa hagrua b'yosa, the most despicable, lowly klipa. Klipa is that husk, that negative husk. And therefore, the war with Midian is symbolic of the war with the Yetzer Hara. This is what makes learning Chumash in general so powerful and so beautiful and so impactful. When we learn Chumash, we have to learn Chumash for ourselves. That's the purpose of learning Chumash. We're supposed to learn these stories not as historical, not purely as historical data and getting facts and figures, right? That's just the external superficial dimension of Torah. The internal spirit of Torah is for the neshama. It's for us, right? I just learned this morning in a Gemara, Torah is our arusa. Arusa is our betrothed one, our bride. Torah is your bride. Torah is your arusa, right? Torah is your arusa. The arusa is a bride. The Torah is for you. The Torah is you. I was speaking, actually, I went yesterday to Lakewood. I took some more people yesterday. Well, making my rounds with everyone, right? I took some more people yesterday to BMG, to Beis Medrash Gevur, to Yeshiva in Lakewood. And I could go on for a long time talking about this, but it was just an amazing experience. Again, you're going into these base medrashes, hundreds, thousands of people learning all together with all these different bata midrashim. So base medrash. So there's like whatever. So we walked into one. It was just like it's a sea. It's an ocean of people sitting there learning. So we walked into one of these base medrashes yesterday, you know, they're all the Bachram are sitting there learning, and they all look the same, right? They're white shirts, right? Black pants, black yarmulkes. It's either a short beard, no beard, or maybe a longer beard, but they all look the same. The same designer glasses, and also the same Gemaras in front of them with the same perek. They're all learning Bava Kama, Meruba, maybe a different perek in the afternoon. So they're also with shtenders. It's like a sea. Like they're all like, you know. So someone I was with, yes, he says, you know, everyone looks the same. Like, where's the individuality? Like, where do people find their individuality? So it's a good question. So I said, you know, the individuality lies in the following, because Torah is for you. Torah is, like I said, it's your arusa. Torah is an expression. When you understand Torah with your unique mind, with your unique understanding, as long as you're following the rules properly of how to learn it properly, but when you come to an appreciation of Torah with your unique personality, with your unique mind, so then that Torah becomes personally yours. It's your personal. So now, even if you could be learning, I could be learning the same page of Gemara as you're learning, or the same page of Chumash that you're learning. We all look identical. We're learning the same page. But the way it lands on you, and the way it gets integrated inside of you, and the way that you understand it, the way you organize the ideas, and the way you appreciate it is unique to who you are. And hence, the very same page to two different people look completely different, just like the faces look different to each other. So even though the clothes, the external, it's really a very beautiful analogy, because our clothes may all look the same, but the face is radically different. So it's true, everyone looks the same in terms of their external dress, but look at the faces. The faces are all unique. And if the faces are all unique, the Torah they're learning is also unique to those faces. And therefore, it's all unique. Every person learning is unique. But the Torah is the Arusa, is your bride. So therefore, when we're learning, right, it's not enough. It's really not enough just to learn it to get facts and figures, because facts and figures are universal, right? If you learn Torah to simply know when this happened, who did it, where did it take place, there's nothing unique about that. It's not unique. You know, we all know the same facts and figures, right? The only time it becomes unique is when you begin to look at it and see it and take the message and draw the message into yourself and into your personal life. Now it becomes unique. And that's what we're supposed to do when you learn. When we learn, we have to find the uniqueness and the message and the lesson which it's supposed to impart to us. So that's why when it comes to these stories with Midian and the wars over here, these wars, yes, on the surface, they happened on the east side of the Jordan, and they happened with this nation, and the king of this nation was this person, and the number of their population was this, and that. These are just universal facts and figures. But in terms of the message, the deepest spiritual message, this is the Mesorah. This is part of what I'm saying is not my idea. This is part of the Torah Shebal Peh, the Mesorah of how we are taught to learn Torah, to understand, to appreciate, to connect to the spiritual message. So here, bringing it back to this, Midian is symbolic of the Yetzer Hara. Symbolic of the Yetzer Hara. And this war is like symbolic of the Spitz as the ultimate war with the Yetzer Hara. And Midian is the Klipa Gru B'Yosef. It's the most despicable Klipa of all of the Klipas which strike the Jewish people because of their desire to destroy the Jewish people. And therefore, hence, this war with Midian and the kashering of their utensils is also symbolic of the war with the Yetzer Hara. So you have to have a new look at kashering of utensils. So kasher, what is a utensil? What is a cup? What is a cup? A cup is for holding things. So pots and pans, knives and forks are for holding things. So if we look at pots and pans and utensils with spiritual eyes instead of physical eyes, So those pots and pans symbolize our faculties. They symbolize the faculties and the things which we use the world. We use our faculties for interacting with the world. What I'm going to say right now is not from here. It's from a different sefer that among our different faculties is our vision, is our eyes, is our hearing, and our speech. These are the major faculties which we use in our lives. So listening, speaking, listening, and seeing. So the goal of our lives is to purify and to purge and to elevate our faculties. These are our vessels, right? Our speech and our listening, our ears and our eyes are our vessels. We really use these vessels very, very significantly. And the goal of kashering, the symbolic message of kashering utensils will be to purge these faculties that we have, purge them of the impurities, to take the impurities out of them. What does that mean? If our eyes have been used for absorbing things which are impure and unholy, replace those things with holy sights. Right? Another example, I mentioned Elisha before in that story. One of the reasons why Elisha, in that passage of it, Elisha said to this king, Yehoram, I'm not going to look at you. I don't want to look at you because you're not supposed to look at an evil person in their face. You shouldn't stare at an evil person. There are things we're not supposed to stare at. You know, there are obvious things you shouldn't stare at, and promiscuity and morality, but there are other things you shouldn't stare at. You shouldn't use our eyes for staring at a wicked person. You're not supposed to stare, like, study the face of a Russia. You can't do that. This is just a side note. You also can't stare at a rainbow or the moon, right? You shouldn't stare at the moon. You shouldn't stare at the rainbow. You can look at a rainbow, glance at it in order to make a blessing, but you shouldn't stare at a rainbow. Because the rainbow symbolizes the wrath upon the world, because Hashem said, when I produce a rainbow, that's a siman, a sign that I'm not going to bring the mabul, the flood ever again. So therefore, if a rainbow appears, you know, it's not really a good sign. You look at it to make a bracha, but then you don't stare at it. You shouldn't meditate and ponder a rainbow. But this is the point of using our sight and our eyes. Don't use our sight. We shouldn't use our eyes to ponder and to meditate upon things which we shouldn't meditate upon, look at, stare at, but use it to stare at the words of Torah, stare at the face of a tzaddik. So that's using our eyes and channeling our sight for holy things. You know, speech and hearing, it's easy, right? Instead of using our ears to listen to gossip and to lashon hara and slander, rechannel that. So purge this vessel. Kasher your ears. Kasher your ears instead of putting all, you know, you've got all this schmutz and gook inside your ears because you're listening to all this lashon hara. Replace it now with holy words of Torah. Our speech, that's an obvious one. We're using our vessel of speech for spewing out filth and lashon hara and slander. Use it for holy words. So these are the three major faculties. It's very, very interesting. This is what I said. This is Rabbi Kaufman from England said this. That the haftorahs we're reading right now as we're approaching Tisha B'Av, this is called the 3 weeks of, we're in the 3 weeks, and there are three special haftorahs. I made a mistake last week. I told you last week that the haftorah for last week was the story of Eliyahu HaNavi, Elijah the prophet. It actually was a mistake. Sometimes it's that way, right? In many years it is that way. It depends whether Parshas Pinchas precedes the 17th of Tammuz or follows the 17th of Tammuz. If it precedes the 17th of Tammuz, so then that was the haftorah we would have read. But if it follows the 7th of Tammuz, but there's a different haftorah, and that haftorah which we did read last week, right, began with the words. If you want to take a look, it's on page in the haftorahs at the back of the book of the Chumash. It's 1193, which it looks like it's the Haftorah. Sorry, 1192. Sorry, right? It's labeled as the Haftorah from Matos, which is really this is Parsha, but that's only when it's the Parshas are separated. So we're not getting into the technicalities, but the Haftorah for last week, the first of the 3 week Parshas Haftorahs, starts with the words Divrei Yirmiyahu ben Chilkiyahu. These are the words of Jeremiah. That's all we need. That's last week's Haftorah. Mm-hmm. This week's Haftorah tomorrow, go to the next page, 1193, Shimu Devar Hashem. Listen to the words of Hashem. That's tomorrow's Haftorah. Next week's Haftorah, which precedes Tisha B'Av, is on page 1195. Chazon Yeshiyahu. The vision, the sight, the vision of Isaiah. So look, pay attention to this. We have the three faculties I mentioned. The last week's Haftorah is Divrei Yirmiyah, the words of Yirmiyah, of Jeremiah. Tomorrow's Haftorah is Shemiya, is listen to the words of Hashem, listen. Next week's Haftorah is look at. Chazon is a vision to see. We've got speech, hearing, and vision. Now that's the 3 weeks leading up to Tisha B'Av, which are sad times. This is a time of mourning and sadness and teshuva. But right after Tisha B'Av, what are the weeks after Tisha B'Av called? They're weeks of consolation. And the parashas, the three parashas which we read right after Tisha B'Av is Devarim, is Ve'eschanon, right? Ekev and Re'eh. Ve'eschanon is, I implored Hashem. That's a repurposing. That's now the purging of our speech to now daven to Hashem. Right, so Ve'eschanon corresponds to the Haftorah of last week's Haftorah, which was about using divrei words, the misuse of words. Now repurpose our misuse of words for now imploring Hashem with our words, davening to Hashem. The second Haftorah tomorrow is listen, and we listen to unfortunately bad things. We listen. That's why he's imploring us. You know, he's admonishing us. Listen. Because we've been listening to the wrong things. The second parasha after Tisha B'Av is Ekev. V'ahaya Ekev Tishma'un. If you will listen, corresponds to that, the listening. So it's like a purging out of the impurities of listening to the purity of listening to words of Torah. And the third half Torah is Chazon Yeshiyahu, the vision of Isaiah. Because we misuse our vision. These are the weeks of sadness, the weeks of recognition of our impurities and our falling down and our misusage things. So we misuse our sight. The third parasha is Re'eh. Look at, pay attention, see, Re'eh, to see. So the three Haftorahs, the first words of the three Haftorahs are speech, listening, and seeing. They correspond to the three Torah portions following Tisha B'Av, which is also speech, listening and hearing, in terms of, it's almost like the same idea. We are repurposing. We're taking the three misuses of those three faculties and applying it. That's what kashrus is about. Kashering utensils is the spiritual. The kashering of our spiritual utensils is take out the impurities and replace them with the purities. So that was something which, again, I saw in this other sefer by this Rabbi Kaufman from England. But back to the Nesiv Shalom, and he says that this is what the kashering of utensils is all about. So it's symbolic of getting rid of the impurities. But if we examine, again, we spoke before about the different levels of kashering of utensils, three ways of doing it. If it's cold water, if it comes into contact with non-kosher food, which is cold, just rinse it off. If it comes into contact with something hot boiling, then you have to boil it. You have to boil the fork. If it comes into contact with non-kosher food, which is with fire, you have to purge it out with fire. So what is that symbolic of? The Yetzirah, because when it comes to the Yetzirah, we have really three levels of attachment to the Yetzirah. There is, in my words, like ambivalent, cool, casual connection to the Yetzirah, eager and excited connection to the Yetzirah, and then you got really passionate connection to the Yetzirah. The Yetzirah lives in our lives in different ways, with different levels of intensity. You know, there are Yetzaharas where we just do it. We don't really think too much about it. It's not really done with a lot of gumption and enthusiasm. You just do it like a person. You eat a piece of food, which is not kosher. You're not really thinking about too much about it. Just like, you're not even passionate about it. Just, this is what I do. But I'm just used to this lifestyle. I'm used to the way I'm doing things. You're not doing with a lot of enthusiasm and eager, but you're just doing it like kind of ambivalently, just doing it coolly. Coolly, C-O-O-L-L-Y, right? So the way to kasher it out, you don't need much to get rid of it. You don't need a lot to really purge it out. You have to recognize it. You have to do teshuva, But since the attachment to it is not so intense, not so, such a fiery, passionate attachment to it, you have to. It's much easier to do teshuvah on the things which you're not passionately connected to. But the more passionately connected you are to a particular Yetzirah, it requires more fire or requires more heat. It requires more heat. So he writes, if the Yetzirah, if the desire, if the temptation, if the distraction, whatever, however you want to identify it is, then if it's with more passion, then you need more passion to get rid of it. So he says one kind of Yetzirah is a lot more cool. Yetzirah shetashmisha bechame. If a Yetzirah is more passionate, Adam oses aveir metoch islavus v'resicha l'tayva. Person does it because he really likes it, enjoys it. Like, you know, this burger is delicious. Cheeseburger is really delicious. I'm really lunch. Oh, this is great, right? Magila bechame. Boil it in water, not the burger. Maybe you should do that. Probably a good idea to do that. But you got to take that desire and like boil it up with heat. Hatikin lezer, the rectification of this tzarach lius gamken al yedis lavas for kedusha. You have to do things with more hislavas. Do things with more enthusiasm. Find mitzvahs to do with more enthusiasm. In other words, we learn about a mitzvah. Learn about tefillah. I give a class in Derech Hashem. We learned Derech Hashem a few years ago on Sunday morning. And I think we need to do it again, because at least one section of it, because I was learning with some people the about the Shema. And it's absolutely spellbinding, the depth of the Shema and all the different dimensions of the Shema and the different kavanas you can have. It's so inspiring. So learning about something, right, inspires you. And the more inspiration you have more enthusiasm, you have more fire, you have more heat and excitement in doing it. So again, it's like repurposing. It's taking the passion for an avera, for a sin, and then finding passion in doing a mitzvah. You know, when you go to a base medrash, you go into a yeshiva, and you see the passion for learning, you know, wow, like, you know, I can, like, maybe I can do that. I can be like that. And to turn the passion to find, it takes learning. It goes back. You got to learn about it. You can't just like superficially learn about things. You got to learn about the ideas, learn about the depth of the mitzvah, really what it means to turn it into passion. Then do it with passion. Do it. Like, start doing it. Don't just talk about it. Don't just think about it. Don't just say, oh, that's so interesting, and like, watch someone else doing it. Do it yourself, right? Do it. Do it. Get in the groove of doing a mitzvah with passion. So that's a tikkun of using your passion for avera. Do it now for a mitzvah. But then the more intense the avera is, with fire, with eish. Now fire is like really intense. He goes on, he says, when it's really with tremendous fire, when the avera is done with fire, you got to really up, you got to turn up the heat even more, right? There's even more hot. When a person has really got a tremendous passion for doing something which is wrong, then you got to really turn up the heat. Now, what's the Eitzah for that? It's very interesting. What is the advice for really tackling the real fiery desires of life? Now, what he's going to say, you're going to be surprised. This is the tikkun and the Eitzah for countering the real fire of Yetzer Hara is... Drum roll, please. Shabbos. The passion. I'm going to read this paragraph inside. The hazmana mesugol lekach, the most opportune time for really converting fire into fire of holiness is Shabbos Kodesh. Shabbo mitzvusa shel Yehuda yosem mu'danes, because on Shabbos the Jew is so much more elevated and is so much more in a state of Eden, of delight, of luster and elevation. Mesugal ora avas Hashem, it's propitious for awakening an avas Hashem, a love of Hashem, v'shtokikus, and an aspiration and a passion. On the level of Oz Tizanag al Hashem, then you will surely delight in Hashem. That's a phrase we say in the davening of Shabbos, in the Mizmiris of Shabbos. As he quotes from the Gemara, from the Gemara says, Kol Hashem Shabbos Gilchasa, if a person observes Shabbos properly, Afilu Avad Avodah Zarah,
even if he worshipped idols, Kedur Enosh, like the generation of Enosh, Mochlum, though they forgive him. Shehiksha v'harei avodah zara. Now the question is why? How can that be? Avodah zara, idolatry, is chayv misa. Person is liable to the death penalty. Ve'ech nimbuchol lo avodah zara. How can the sin of idolatry be forgiven through observing Shabbos properly? And the answer is shashom b'shabbos gilchosa, because a person who observes Shabbos according to the halacha, haynu b'madrega iloyas shel nechsefes v'gam kolsa nafshe. Observing Shabbos to the ultimate degree is having this passion and this pining and this desire to want to be connected. Where a person's soul is completely overtaken and infused with the hishtokikus, with this desire to be connected to Hashem. So Shmira Shabbos starts off with the halachas of Shabbos, it goes without saying. But it rises to a level, and the truth is, it's only through the halachas of Shabbos you can actually get to this madrega, because as long as I'm involved in the world, as long as I'm involved in malacha, you can't, it's a disconnect from this spiritual elevation that Shabbos affords a person, because it's, the physical is the physical. You've got to get out of that, got to get out of that involvement in order to go into this space, this pristine space of kedusha, of holiness, to be connected and have the hishtokikas, the desire, the passion for Hashem. This is like a dimension of almost like death and a kiss. She misa to kedusha. It's like a misa to kedusha, a death of holiness. Shemosa nashla Hashem is baruch, that a person gives himself over to Hashem. That's what it means to be shomer Shabbos properly. Ki ika hilcha Shabbos, because the primary, the mainstay of the laws of Shabbos is Masha Yehudi, this that a Jew. Where the Yid reaches the level of my soul is lovesick for you, Hashem. That a person's soul goes out from the tremendous delight. That through this, it's almost like a self-imposed spiritual death of the physical in order to reach the spiritual. And that's why even if a person committed avodah zara, it brings mechila. But the absorption, this is what it means, the ultimate absorption in Kedusha of Shabbos is the replacement of the ultimate absorption of the fire of all other desires. So that's his advice for how to tap into the fire of Kedusha, the fire of Kedusha as a process of purging out the fire of Avera, to go into Shabbos, to take Shabbos in, absorb Shabbos, and live Shabbos in the proper way, in the halachic way. Right, and in the halachic way to experience, and it's almost, you know, it's almost like you're peeling away all of the stuff, the physical, and all of the indulgences and the over, just the preoccupation. You're peeling it away. You're opening up like a curtain, and you're peering in. You're going into this world of kedusha, this world of holiness, singing zmiros, singing songs, and yeah, you can have something to eat. We do eat. But it's all channeled. It's all this channeling. It's taking the desire for food and the desire for these things, channeling it towards a higher purpose of nafshi la Hashem. My soul pines completely and is absorbed and is wants to be connected. So this is, but that's how he applies it for that. But the message is, and the idea is this little passage over here of kashering utensils. Our mission is to kasher our utensils.
Kasher ourselves.
Kasher ourselves, to kasher our utensils, to kasher our faculties, to kasher our sight, to kasher our hearing, to kasher our listening, right? It's actually interesting, you know, the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch says, what's worse, listening to Lashon Hara or speaking Lashon Hara? So I always thought it was speaking. It's worse when I say listen. It's listening and believing to lashon hara. So you know, I don't know if it's symbolic or significant or not. But the sequence which I mentioned in the parshas and the haftorah is it goes from speaking, right? The first haftorah was speaking words. Second one was listening, and then then seeing. So in terms of speaking lashon hara and listening to lashon hara, it's going in ascending order. I don't know. I don't know yet. I don't know, but it would sound maybe looking at things which are forbidden is even worse than even hearing and accepting lashon hara. I don't know, but anyway,
But the message is, and the mission we have is to kasher ourselves, and turn the passion for whatever we're involved in into passion for Hashem, passion for mitzvahs, and we can do that most optimally on Shabbos by turning everything, all of our faculties, into passion for Hashem on Shabbos.